Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
NPR recently did a piece on Sarah Damasky, and the NPR summary was that they summarized it in an article, and it said, Damasky wanted to know, objectively, is being at work any harder than being at home? So Damasky was a professor of labor and employment at Penn State. She had 122 people swab their saliva 6 times a day for 3 days to test their cortisol levels. It's a biological marker of stress. And she found that the most relaxing part of people's day is when they're on the job. She finds that that's true across gender, across education level, across occupation level. And she says, so it's a pretty strong finding, end quote. Of course, at the extremes, one or the other is more difficult. Work's going to be more stressful if you're working for, say, an always screaming boss who's at high deadline and in a clanging carcinogenic smelting plant. And home, of course, is going to be more stressful if, say, you have an always complaining spouse. You've got 4 demanding children, and you're living next door to someone with music or something else that's pounding in the middle of the night. But in the large middle, in that murky middle, a more typical work-and-home situations, I thought it'd be fun to hear what you, my dear listeners, experience. Is your work life or home life more stressful? And what do you think of the fact that most people do find work less stressful than home is? What does that say about our workplaces? Is the work our workplaces better than the media gives it credit for? Every time you see something about the media, it's like, you know, these horrible, you know, madmen, crazy places where, you know, workers are treated like garbage. Is that fair? In most workplaces that I at least have spent time in, you hear please and thank you a lot more often than you hear it at home. And bosses usually can't get away with, you know, yelling at workers, at least very often. On the other hand, are we overrating family? Are we overrating children, given that people are much more stressful there? Maybe it's all men's fault. We're not doing yet, even though we're doing more housework, we're not doing 50% of the housework. Maybe we should be worrying less about keeping our places house beautiful. Or maybe we should spend less time and therefore less stress making time-consuming meals, and instead we should just microwave some veggies and brown rice and maybe broil a piece of salmon if you're not a vegan, throw some spices on it, and have some fresh fruit or yogurt for dessert. So talk to me. Are you less stressed at home or at work? Why? You have a proposal for improving matters, either improving matters at home? The number to call here at Work with Marty Nemko for that, here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And especially on a show where I have no guests, I make sure that you are my priority. So if you don't feel like weighing in about your situation, telling your story about whether work or home is more stressful, I certainly do invite you to call in for what I call a 3-minute workover. If you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, whether you're 16 or 76, a unemployed truck driver's assistant or a CEO, whether the problem is figuring out what the hell you want to be when you grow up, even if you're already grown up, or you're simply experiencing existential angst as you're getting older or financial fears. Those are all good reasons to call for that 3-minute workover. The phone number again here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as usual, I try to intersperse calls with some tips about under-the-radar careers. That's what a lot of you say you like, particularly like to hear about, so I shall do that. One of the things that we don't think about often is ever more people are not living in homes but in condominiums. And as condominium developments grow in size, there needs to be people who manage condominium association affairs. not only people complained, but managing the homeowners association and dealing with laws, and even though you're not a lawyer, you're hiring contractors, you're supervising maintenance, you're collecting bills. So there is an interesting career we normally hear about, property manager. That's commonly spoken about. But condominium association manager, something you might not have thought of, it's an interesting career for the right sort of person. In any case, the phone number again, if either you want to weigh on, tell your story about whether you find your workplace more stressful or your home life more stressful, or you'd like a 3-minute workover, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help, or what's on your mind? Hi, it's you.
Hi, my name is Chelsea Weekly. I'm a tutor for children with special needs in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I thought I would call in and tell you that I find that when I'm at work, I have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different than having a purpose at home, which is very selfish in purpose. But when you're out there doing something productive in the world, it's wonderful.
Makes sense. Now, normally the public would think of special needs kids as being extraordinarily stressful because they're not exactly always compliant. They don't exactly always learn quickly. How do you keep that stress under control?
By being patient, by understanding that the goal isn't for me to look like I've taught them something, but the goal is for me to help them figure out what they need to figure out, and to wait and show them the open doors until they have something that they can seize on and go forward on. And until then, you just make it fun, because most of it is helping them figure out an enjoyment for learning and studying, and being part of that kind of career is very fulfilling. So I can see why it's not stressful, because you're doing something with purpose.
How much of that patience is inborn in you, and how much of that is acquired?
It's probably 50-50, just like all the other
right.
psychological attributes.
Right.
Part of it's that you just have the capacity to tell your body, wait, you know, mm-hmm. I know that this is frustrating, maybe this kid isn't getting it right now, but mm-hmm. they will soon. And part of it's that you can see it in their face, you can see them processing it, and waiting for them is very rewarding. That kind of delayed reaction is wonderful in most situations. If you just wait long enough for someone to give you an honest response, you get much better responses.
Well, I really appreciate your call. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
No problem. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye. If you have a story you want to tell that explains why you're either more stressed at work or more stressed at home, in light of that study that came out of the University of Pennsylvania that found that most people are physiologically less stressed, that is, they release less cortisol at work than at home. Do you have the boss from hell? Are you experiencing enormous stress from work? Are you getting more stress at home? Feel free to call. Or if you want a 3-minute workover and you got a work problem, I can usually help. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as usual, I'm going to intersperse some more under-the-radar careers. People who are hands-on fix-it types normally think about carpenter and electrician and, even drywall worker or roofer. But we don't normally think about elevator installer and repairer. And yet, people who work on elevators and escalators, there's always a lot of work. And moving walkways, like at the airport, there's always a lot of work because they are constantly moving. They're very motor-driven. And, of course, it's mission-critical, so there's a lot of preventive maintenance to make sure that some cable doesn't snap or whatever. And I've been told that they make very good money. So, normally we tend to focus more on white-collar careers because that's the predominant listenership here at KALW. But, I like to occasionally sprinkle in some blue-collar work as well, and elevator installer and repairer, and again, as I said, escalators and moving walkways, might be an under-the-radar career. And, of course, it can't be offshored. Another one. Now, and this is the grungies. I guess I have to start with this story. I used to think, certainly, I used to get, when I would walk, before there was a time that people did not pick up their dog's poop, and there was just poop around, and you kind of just looked away, it was gross, and that was it. But it's become the norm, and I think it's a good thing, that people do have these poop bags, and they pick up their poop. And so I have found myself getting desensitized. It's like nothing. It's like, you know, I don't even think about it. You know, Einstein, as a matter of fact, right before I came in to do the show, I had a few extra minutes. I took Einstein for the walk, we pooped, I cleaned it up, and it was like nothing. It was just, threw it in the trash, it was nothing. Well, if that's true for me in this situation, and perhaps for others, I see most people not, you know, finding it unduly disgusting to be cleaning up their doggy's poop, there is nonetheless a tremendous antipathy to careers in the sewage industry. And yet there are jobs that pay well, that will always be in demand in wastewater treatment. You may find yourself that, like in cleaning up your own dog's poop, you may find that after a while it just becomes not an issue. Yeah, I'm not saying it's the most scintillating cocktail party conversation to say, well, what do you do for a living? Well, I work in a wastewater treatment plant. But in fact, if you wear that badge proudly and kind of explain a little bit about it, the right person, maybe, you know, I suppose that some people with sensitive stomachs might not feel great about, you know, eating hors d'oeuvres and hearing about the processing of feces, but it may even, as appropriate, not be something that's more interesting than, hi, well, I'm a marketing manager, or, you know, I'm a fundraiser for a nonprofit. You know, I think it may be a lot more interesting, even in party conversation, to talk about what it's like to work at a wastewater treatment plant than that. But I could be wrong. But in any case, it's kind of an under-the-radar career and something that I thought I would share. And remember that when wastewater plants, there are certainly these low-skilled jobs, but there's also there are people who are plumbers who work there. There are planners who work for planning expansion or revamping. There are project managers. So think of wastewater treatment not as a job, but think of it as an industry, as a field that is certainly under the radar. And because it's gross in concept to most people, and people go, ew, the competition for jobs is far less. It's like, I remember I once bought a house. I'm not a real estate investor, but I did once buy one house, and I deliberately looked for ones that were grungy, ones that had potential, but that were, you know, ruined. In fact, one house I bought had dog eaters, ironically, I did not plan to say this, but that had dog poop, the smell of dog poop still in the house because the previous tenant or the owner or whatever would let their dog alone in the house for days at a time, and there would be poop. Well, I said, great. Nobody else is going to want to buy that, and yet that's fixable. And so I was able to buy it for a lot less money. And it's the same is true with careers. If you can put aside the initial ew reaction, and that could be, for example, in the death industry, meaning, like, I'm not a big fan of funeral homes. They really do take advantage too often of the people in their moment of grief. But people who are working for, say, nonprofits that are involved in low-cost, you know, funerals or low-cost, you know, burials or whatever, you know, I think if you can go that route, you may find it's a lot less competitive than in those fields that everybody wants to get. You know, I want to work for the environment. I want to work in broadcasting. I want to work in fashion. I want to work in video games. The competition is bizarre. You know, hundreds of applicants for jobs like that. And maybe for some people, I mean, if you're a superstar, you can get a job anywhere. You know, you have your, you know, you went to Harvard, and then you got your master's degree from Stanford, and your MBA, and you've had a series of promotions and in rapid fire succession, and you've got these great tech skills as well as leadership skills. You can be in any field you want. But if you're a mere mortal, the odds are greater that you won't be looking for a job for 99 weeks if you are, in fact, looking more under the radar. Okay, I will one more time, and then if you guys are not interested in this, I thought it was an interesting topic. The question of whether it's more stressful at work or at home for you. As I said, NPR reported recently on a University of Pennsylvania study that find that almost everybody across gender, race, socioeconomic status found that people are more stressed at home than at work. And I was curious what your personal experience would be. I thought it'd be fun to hear it. So if you want to share that, that's great. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. As well, if you, and especially now, if you would like a 3-minute workover, you've got a work problem. That's kind of frankly what I've been put on this earth to do, it seems. I've been doing these 3-minute workovers for 25 years here at KALW and 29 years as a career counselor. And the beauty is, it's free to you right now. So you can call, and the phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. More careers that are under the radar that I like talking about. This is another one for hands-on careers, but it's not quite, could be described, can't really be described as blue-collar, because you do need a college degree for it. I'm not sure why, but you do. A prosthetist or an orthotist. A prosthetist is somebody who makes artificial braces, artificial limbs, even eyes. And it's a, again, very under-the-radar career for a hands-on person, something you might want to consider. Okay, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Good morning.
Hi.
You know, I think that the difference between work and home stressors is that work is very structured, right? And you've got this very clear set of parameters, and there are certain rules about the way that people can treat you, as you mentioned before.
Right.
And in the home, you know, things are wildly unstructured in some homes, and in other homes, of course, you've got, you know, maybe a sort of more of a Teutonic mindset among the parents, but there's all these people negotiating about how things are going to go in any given day. But the difference, I think, Marty, is that at the home, you potentially are more emotionally supported, whereas at work, you know, it's especially in the corporate environment, you're not emotionally supported.
That's interesting. I would think, of course, it varies. I've seen many homes where the children are so wrapped up in themselves, all they think about is themselves, and they yell and they scream, and the significant other in the home may be exhausted and also knows that he or she is not going to lose his job right away if he yells or is rude or doesn't say please or thank you. So I guess it varies. You want to tell me a little bit about your situation at home?
Sure. I am a full-time working mother. My husband works full-time. I have children who are 11 and 9. Mm-hmm. And I work in a corporate environment. And so this really struck me that because my home life's pretty happy. Mm-hmm. But it is unstructured, and I the things that freak us out and stress us out are you know, like you said before, should our home be exquisite? Should we, you know, should we be paying so much attention to meal preparation that, you know, we're little Martha Stewarts?
Right.
You know, there's those stressors, but those are self-imposed. You know, but the happiness that you can have at home, without the fear of somebody, you know, stabbing you in the back or, you know, that's a comfort. That's an extraordinary comfort. And if you have a relatively stable family life emotionally, that's not going to happen to you.
Tom, so, I'm sorry I interrupted, but I was curious. You said that you might be getting stabbed back at work. Tell me a little bit about what's going on at work.
Well, it's not, there are really fine people all over the world, and you know, to think that I mean, you have to have a glass is half full in this. But in the corporate environment, regardless of how good people are, or how well-minded there are, the competition for resources and for promotions and all of those things, I think, forces people into this strange. You know, it's dog eat dog, and I think that people get pretty base.
Can you give me one example?
Sure. Ass kissing, right? Where people, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah,
sorry.
I think so.
Where people get, you know, they may manipulate
those above them or manipulate a situation. Mm-hmm. Or, for instance, if you are not at a meeting that you were late for or missed, people may step into your role and insinuate that you are not capable of handling it. People will leave you off of communications or emails on purpose in order to usurp your position. Mm-hmm. And it does happen, and I've seen really good people do these kinds of things.
Yep.
It's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, this is really good and really right. Can you speak of one thing, honestly, that's ever happened to you?
Oh, man.
Or something that you've done to somebody else. Let's not even necessarily paint you as the saint here.
No, and I'm not. And, you know, and none of us are. And that's,
right.
That's what we all need to remember in the workplace and the home is, you know, speak your truth, but also be aware that your truth may not be exactly, you know, transparent. I think one of the things that does happen to me in the corporate world is that because I'm not incredibly political, and I am pretty transparent, and I shoot from the hip, that I don't get the sweet promotions, and I don't get the kinds of perks that I see a lot of people who really strive for, you know, to climb the ladder get. And it's injurious. It really is. But at the same time, it's give and take, right? You know, I don't want to be that way. I can't be that way. But it is injurious, and I don't get the kinds of promotions and perks that other people get who really play the game well.
Would the goddess say that the, there's always multiple reasons why we don't or do get promotions. If the goddess were looking down upon you, would the goddess say 100% of the reason that you're not getting the promotions is that you're not playing the political game, or would the goddess allocate some of the causation somewhere else?
Yeah, of course. You know, we're, you know, back to being transparent. Am I lazy? No. I work hard, but I don't, maybe I'm not quite as diligent as some of those people who spend a lot of hours in the office. That's because I value my home life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's partly that I don't work quite as hard as some of those people who are getting the big promotions.
And
but I love my home life.
And that's a trade-off that many people make. I remember when BP, this was well before the oil disaster, they wanted to see more women in senior management. So they made an offer to all the women and said, it wasn't quite as overt as that, but I don't know the details. But they said, if you're willing to do the things it takes to become a senior VP, that is travel across the country periodically, the workplace expectation is more like 55 hours than 45 hours, etc. And they found that almost none of the women took them up on that. They were going to get a double or triple promotion, or they were going to get special consideration or whatever it was. And almost none of the women took them up on the offer because more women than men do value work-life balance, just what you were saying, the family issue. Does that surprise you?
Doesn't surprise me in the slightest. And the organization I work for is pretty forward-thinking in terms of how they support women in the home and women with families. But at the same time, there's no question, it's subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it can't be stated out loud.
Right.
But I think that regardless of whether a woman has family, the men are advancing more quickly. And I know that freaks people out when women say that, but it couldn't be clearer in my organization.
Yeah. Anyway, I really appreciate your call. It was a great call, and it was great that you called. Thanks so much for calling.
Marty.
Yeah, good conversation. Yeah, great.
Okay,
you be well.
Okay.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. I'm doing two things. One is I am fascinated by the study that came out of the University of Pennsylvania that said that people across both genders and races and socioeconomic statuses, of course, not just both races, there are many races, just want to be clear, that across race, socioeconomic status, and gender, that people are more stressed at home than at work. And so I was interested in hearing people's stories, your stories, about whether which is more stressful for you. So that's one reason I'm inviting you to call. And the other is, as usual, I love to try to help you solve your work problems. So if you've got any kind of career-related problem, don't know what you want to be when you grow up, unhappy on your current job, self-employment idea, you want to run by me, whatever. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for what I call a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
How you doing this morning?
I am well, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, Marty, what if I was like a super liberal guy? I want to leave the Democratic Party.
I'm not quite hearing you. You're saying you're a super liberal guy and you want to leave the Democratic Party? Is that what you said?
Yeah, left of the Democrats.
Okay.
And I wanted to go maybe to Biloxi, Mississippi, or somewhere in Louisiana. Hold on just one second. Where are you going now?
44th and the Trail.
Good. And I went to some little town, and I wanted to start like a liberal newspaper.
That's very interesting.
How would one do this?
It's a great question, and I kind of love it, actually.
And Marty, let's just say I'm super conservative, and I wanted to do the same thing in San Francisco.
Right. Well, let's take, because our listenership is overwhelmingly liberal, let's take your example. Let's say you wanted to go to Biloxi, Mississippi, and start a liberal newspaper. What I would probably do to keep my costs down, and we live in a world where the newspapers of all stripes are going out of business, I would do it online.
I would
create a blog that was local, that dealt with local issues that are already of concern to the people of Biloxi, Mississippi. And it could be some, you know, tax increase, or it could be some increase in social welfare programs for the poor, or any typical liberal cause, an environmental thing. And I would start blogging about it, and I would contact the Green Party. I would get active. I would send, once I started to blog, I would send my blog posts to the local Green Party in Mississippi, to the local socialist labor parties, workers' parties, unions, all the typical suspects, because even in a conservative state, there are always small pockets of liberality. And then see if that built what I call virality, that it would go viral, that people would, they would start to forward it to other people. And that's how I would start. I wouldn't necessarily think newspaper. Newspaper really is a communication vehicle that is so expensive and not even used that much, especially by liberals. Liberals tend to be more involved in the media. As we saw, the Obama administration's campaigns are extremely media savvy and online savvy, whereas the Republicans were back in the old days with the with newspapers. So that would be my advice. What's your reaction to that?
Sounds pretty good. Can you expand on it just a little more?
Ask me a specific question, and I'd be happy to.
This comes about from me listening to a certain radio talk show host, the guy, in my view and with my perspective, comes out with a lot of truth, and he's not ashamed to put that truth out, and it really. I was riding down the road the other day, and I just thought to myself, "Yeah, this is me," you know, to put my version of the truth out. Mm.
So I'm reading between the lines. You're more like it's more like you listen to a conservative talk show host, and you'd like to bring that to San Francisco. Am I reading that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So is the same applies. So let's just, you know, again, for balance, let me present how I would do it in San Francisco. It's the same story. I would simply start blogging, and then there are very small but existing conservative entities and libertarian entities that exist here. And there's a Libertarian Party of San Francisco, for example. There are conservative groups. There are Republican groups and even conservative groups here in the Bay Area, and I would just take let's take an issue here. Like, for example, here in the Bay Area, there's wide agreement that we want to have, we'll call it, whether it be comprehensive immigration reform, which is the liberal term for it, or amnesty, which is the conservative term for it. But there is wide agreement that we want to make the illegal immigrants legal here. But there's a small group of conservatives who think that's horrible, that it's a net very bad for society. And, you know, blogging about that position and then sending it, you're not going to change liberals' minds on those. People tend to be pretty, we say we celebrate diversity, but of ideology, but we really don't. We're pretty hardened in our views here and believe that the liberal view is the right view and that conservatives are just one step from a Nazi. And so I would encourage you to not try to, just like all politicians, when they try to get votes, they don't try to, you know, if I'm a liberal politician, I don't go to a conservative area. I try to get out the vote by going to liberal areas and get more liberals to vote. So focus not on trying to change people's minds so much, but rather to start by building your base. By writing an article for why, for example, you might think that illegal immigration is a net negative for society, and sending it to those conservative entities and individuals and attending meetings and becoming known in those, and that way you're more likely to energize that base, which is more likely to do some good in your mind than if you try to go and try to convert some liberal into a conservative. Does that make sense?
Marty, it makes perfect sense, and the thing I love about following this radio, I can call you and ask you anything, and you're going to give me an answer.
Well,
it's like having a, I don't know, or just, you know, someone wise, just to be a soundboard to me. Thanks, Marty.
It's my pleasure. It's a privilege, actually. So thank you for having me. And I welcome all callers, whether you're liberal or conservative. So I actually, you know, I rarely get a conservative caller on this station, and I welcome you in the spirit of true ideological diversity, because I do believe that all wisdom does not reside either side of center. But anybody who's well-meaning, there is well-meaning, benevolent ideas that exist across the political spectrum and the socioeconomic spectrum and the philosophical spectrum.
Right
so,
on.
So thank you very much for calling. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, Marty.
Yeah.
Hi. I was calling about the 3-minute makeover. I guess I'm probably calling in at the wrong time.
No, it's wonderful time. Please do. Tell me what your situation is.
Sure. Thanks. Well, I'm calling from the East Coast, Greater Boston area.
Yeah.
I'm 52 years old. I've been a chip designer since I graduated from college at 21.
Uh-huh.
My career hasn't moved along at all. I'm pretty much doing what I've been doing since I started.
Mm.
And, you know, I realized that, first of all, there's no more chip design work or in my specialty on the East Coast anymore.
Mm.
And plus, you know, I look around and everybody's a lot younger than me, and
right,
they work for less money.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out what I should do. I mean, you know, I can't imagine going back to college and getting like an MBA or something at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of stumped. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Perfect call.
I was wondering if you had any thoughts.
Perfect call. Okay, great. So, is your chip design skill? First of all, I want to kind of understand your expertise and see if there is something transferable in that, or should we go for something radically different? You know, I know guys who specialize in, you know, RF chip design. I know other people who are, you know, in nano chip design. Do you have a specific expertise, or is it across the board?
I do have an expertise. First of all, the sector I work in is digital chip design, and it's also in the area of manufacturing and testability,
mm-hmm,
where you figure out how to make a chip testable.
Right.
And, you know, there are jobs on the West Coast for this kind of work, but again, you know, just my age, I think, is starting to work against me.
Okay. And do you want to, first of all, how important is it that you stay on the East Coast?
Well, I don't want to say set in my ways, but I've always kind of liked Tesla.
You're cutting out now. I'm not hearing you.
Yes.
You're moving into a cell phone area that's not good. Can you move into an area that's better? Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not hearing you now, so I'm going to ask you to hang up and welcome your calling back if you can get into an area where your cell phone is not cutting out. Okay, thanks a lot for the call. In case he doesn't call back, let me just simply say the things that were going through my head as he was talking is normally the two thing. I mean, the guy has really stayed the course. He's stayed in a field for 30 years. He probably has learned a ton about chip design. In testing, and he wants to create something, things that are testable. So the things that normally people do is they move into either into training others, and so perhaps him doing either part-time or full-time teaching in the area, or he becomes a consultant to various different entities. So instead of just doing the same thing for one company, as you get older, you actually have more credibility as a consultant and as a trainer. So those are the two thoughts that came to mind, and which is what I would tell him if he called back. So, but let me see. All right. So there are other calls. Is he back on the line? Yeah. Okay. So let's get him back. Welcome back. Are you there? Hello. Are you there? Let's see. We're trying to get him back. We will. Of course, I understand. Yeah. Okay, welcome back. Are you there?
Thanks.
Okay, good. So I don't know if you heard what I was saying when we were off the air. I guess you didn't. Did you hear? Were you listening?
No, I didn't. I don't have your radio out here, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. Well, like sometimes people listen on the computer, which is why usually people in the East Coast listen on the computer where they could hear it. But in any case, here's what I was going to say. Usually people, when they reach your age, and especially because you admirably stayed the course for 30 years, you've acquired a lot of knowledge. The two things that actually when you're older you have an advantage is you either go and train people on how to do what you're doing, say at a community college or at a certification program, or you're a consultant, because as a consultant, again, you're going to have more credibility as an older person. Do either of those have appeal, or do you want to do something more radical? Do you want to make a more radical change?
You know, I would be open to a more radical change, but to tell you the truth, I wouldn't know what that would be. I mean, I've read your book, Cool Career for Dummies,
right.
You know, and I was like really excited about some of the things in there, you know, like being a tugboat captain or whatever. But mm-hmm. I think I'm just too old to start doing that.
Okay, let's talk about that. I am not a Pollyanna, so I am well aware of how daunting it is to make a radical career change. But sometimes it's not. There are some people who are older who do make radical career changes. So for purposes of this phone call, as a thought exercise, a thought experiment, let's play with that. So just to give something to roll around in your head. Now, it was interesting. I don't think it was random that there were 500 careers that I outlined that are under the radar in that book, Cool Careers for Dummies. You picked tugboat operator as one. What is it about that is appealing to you?
Yeah, so there's a few things. One is, you get to work on something. You know, you're operating a piece of equipment, which I really like. It kind of runs in my blood, I think. I have three brothers who are pilots. And the second thing is, there's a lot of, you know, it seems like a very, you know, it's kind of independent. There's no one out there telling you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in charge, and there's not going to be someone standing over your shoulder micromanaging you.
Okay. And do you like the idea of being involved in transportation in that way, you know, whether it be a tugboat or, you know, this could be completely off the wrong path, but I'm just playing here. This is where we're starting. You know, whether it be a train or a plane or a truck or a limousine or, you know, do you like the, or a tugboat or do, you know, or a party boat or a fishing boat or, I mean, do those, is that the kind, is that where the real core interest is in operating a vehicle, or is that wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong about that. You asked, do I like the idea of being in transportation? I haven't explored it, to the level where like, okay, what's the reality of what's a day in and day out kind of thing of being an operator actually like, you know? And I could get into that and just realize, boy, I really hate this.
Right.
But from an outside perspective, it looks great.
So let's play with that for a moment. And it could be something you do part-time or do it full-time or not at all. But I'm going to make up what I think it's like. I think the tugboat thing is tough. I think, as I remember reading, being a harbor pilot, for example, is what I actually called it. And a harbor pilot, you know, it really is very political. You got to be in the thing for 30 years. That may not be realistic. But there certainly are driver jobs that are realistic. And so I'm going to ask you to pick one, you know, truck, bus, chauffeur, limousine, taxi cab, which one of those is more realistic, that isn't so high, you know, low probability? Which of those has the most appeal on the face of it?
None of those have much appeal.
Okay. Which one does?
No, the ones that you mentioned to me did not.
Right.
They were just, you know, I could see myself stuck in traffic and have a bunch of people mad at me all day.
Got it. So let's play with this. So if you put a gun to my head and you said, Marty Nemco, you've got to get me a job as a tugboat pilot or I'll blow your brains out. Here's what I would do. I wouldn't say it was a high probability event. But, you know, there's always the exception. It may be that, indeed, it probably is that 95% of the people have been on boats for their whole life and they got this network and all the rest of it. But if I had to try to help you get that job, what I would do is the following. First of all, let me explain what I think it would be like. I think it is probably, there aren't a whole lot of surprises. I'm guessing that if you are a tugboat pilot, yes, you're having to communicate all the time with the big, you know, the big boats and with the shore and whatever. But yes, it's a very technical thing. You know how to get in the water if necessary and connect the anchors, you connect the big boat to yours, but a lot of time it's done automatically, and you know you have to be really good at negotiating the squalls and knowing where the shallow spots and the deep spots are, and you know it's a really tricky thing to try to really get that big ocean liner or whatever into the dock. But it's something that's a craft that gets learned. So that's probably what it's like. Does that still sound good?
Yes, and you hit on something very important in your last statement there. It's a craft that has to be learned,
mm-hmm.
and things that are crafts that have to be learned. I actually, from a learning style I've learned, I've realized about myself, is I get better at things by doing them over and over again and refining it. And they can be really complicated things. And over time, I just get really good and very, very proficient at it. Now, one thing about chip design doesn't work in my favor is it changes so rapidly that it's hard to get really, really good at it.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just my learning style. I think I'm a slow learner, but I'm a very good learner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So let's say, okay, so just for purposes of this conversation, let's say you liked doing it. So what I would do, the way, and I had to get you that job, what I would do would be I would urge you to identify all of the tugboat owners associate. There must be a tugboat owners association or some, or harbor pilots association or whatever. And I would get myself deeply involved in order for you to defy the odds and be one of the rare ones that get hired quickly. You have to make them actually fall in love with you, to make the irrational decision to hire you, at least as an assistant, as the newbie, rather than some you know, wizened person who spent his life on the sea. And so you become really liked, and somebody offers you a, you know, on Christmas Day, when everybody else wants off, or New Year's or whatever, a sub position as an assistant to the assistant on the boat or whatever it is. And that gets you in the door. And then if you're lucky and you keep putting, you know, keeping developing as many relationships as you can with as many people. And yes, of course, you got to have the certifications, or decide you don't need to be the tugboat guy. You can be the assistant who may not need the certifications or as many certifications. If you just stayed the course and make your goal to identify 10 human beings who are totally into that world and building relationships with them, becoming their friends, going and drinking beers with them, sending them articles, thanking them, going to when they do a demonstration class, whatever the hell it is, and just treat each of those 10 like a seed that needs to be watered and fertilized over time. That would increase your chances of defying the odds and becoming the guy at age 54 or 55 or whatever, at least part-time, being involved in the tugboat world. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I like what you're saying. I think that the odds are really
bad.
Tough.
Yeah, they are. But
what
do you have to...
What you're saying makes sense to me.
What I love about these kind of things is the odds are low, but the risk is low. I'm not asking you to quit your job. I'm asking you to take on as a little hobby, instead of watching TV or golf or whatever the hell you do, that instead I'm going to make my hobby inveigling myself into this world of tugboat operators. And if it works, fine. If it doesn't work, you've had a good time trying the adventure. It's like going on an Easter egg hunt. Whether or not you get the eggs, it's kind of fun trying. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's great. I like the way you're talking.
All right. Well, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead then. I'm really glad you listen across the country. Go eat some Maine lobster for me, will you?
Will do, Marty. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. You are listening to Work with Marty Nemco here on KLW. We are doing 3-minute workovers. So if you or someone you love is stuck, I've got a lot of callers on the line, but I probably could have room for one more. So if you've been procrastinating, want some career help, I can usually provide it. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
I'm in computer security, so my job is a combination of advising companies on solving security problems and doing a series of original research projects. It's my dream job, and I'm really happy to have it, but you spoke to a caller a couple of months ago, and you mentioned that women often think they need to work a million hours in order to feel good enough to get to the superstar status, and I'm definitely in that boat. And I'm so overwhelmed by the combination of internal stress of, hey, I've made it, I'm here, I need to be awesome, and the combination of external pressures of having deadlines and really needing to produce good work. So I'm kind of at a problem at a point where I don't know how to fix my own problem, because I don't know what to do next. Can
sure.
you help me?
Sure. Well, I think I can help. I can try without question. First of all, it is both men and women who, especially when they're in high-level jobs, who feel that they have to make a trade-off, that in general the rock stars they don't work 37 and a half hours a week and go home and have work-life balance. They do. Men and women tend to work 50, 55, 60 hours a week. And we could have a societal argument about whether society should not expect that of folks, but you know that may not happen for a long time. So the question is more of choices. There are people, you know. I don't think you can. You know, I may be wrong. How many hours a week do you work right now?
It's actually kind of hard to say. Since I work from home a lot of the time, I'm not really keeping tabs on hours.
Sure.
I would say probably in the 60-hour range.
Right.
What ends up happening, like this weekend, I have some deadlines on Monday, so I was supposed to do some fun things, go to a motorcycle race,
right.
And you know, whatever. And for my boyfriend, I'm like, okay, I just can't do it. I need to stay home and work on this project. He gets it because he's also a rock star.
Right.
But I don't want to keep doing that.
Okay, right. So there really are two choices in the world. You know, I'm just playing facilitator here, and I'm probably not saying anything that isn't common sense. You know, there's obviously increased risk with every time you say no to a night and weekend meeting. There's every time you say no to learning the newest algorithm. But we all make choices about the calculus. Some of us are really crazy like me. I literally work every minute I'm awake. It's unbelievable. I'm bizarre. And I make the choice that is, for me, the meaning of the life well led. Yes, I spend some time with my wife, but in general, I literally work 75 hours a week, for sure. And I make that choice because I cosmically feel that the meaning of my life is defined completely by how much I contribute. I'm a real, like a monk. I'm like an ascetic. All I care about, I'm this atheist who's a Calvinist. But I know that that's weird. I know that that's extreme. Everybody makes a choice where on the continuum between there are some people who sit at home and let either somebody else support them or the taxpayer support them, and they do nothing but play video games, get stoned, and you know, hang out. We all make choices to where on the continuum we want to be and what risks we're willing to take. So if you said to me, you know, you do not want to continue to work these 60 hours a week, and that you, especially as a woman, feel like in order to do that, you got to do that, you you can, you've got to decide that you're going to take this choice and say, make the choice and say, okay, I am going to do on a case-by-case basis, each time I'm asked to do something extra, each time I'm asked to learn something new, each time I think I should learn something new, I'm going to perhaps reevaluate the calculus. I'm not going to stop working. I'm not going to work, you know, work very few hours, but I'm going to see if I can, on average, lower my work life to 50 hours a week and believe that I've paid my dues enough and I'm good enough that even at 50 hours a week, I'm not going to get fired. Is that the mindset that you should be taking, or is that simply not going to work in your situation?
Well, I think I'm willing to work the 70 hours if I feel like it's going to make me feel more confident and better. I think I'm not really after the timing of my work could be better. So if I would have taken care of all of this stuff during the work week, okay, then that's a time management problem that I can fix. I think the bigger issue is just I'm never feeling like I'm good.
Got
enough.
It. So it's a psychological issue, yeah. To what extent is the following helpful or not? We are indeed, I'm not a Christian, but I do value the Christian belief that we are all human and we are flawed and we make mistakes. Every one of us. And some of it, you know, one of Christianity's balms is that we forgive ourselves and that God will forgive us and all the rest of it. How much of it is accepting the fallibility of humankind? That you know, in 7.7 billion people on the planet, there's always going to be somebody who's better, smarter, harder working, or whatever. But at some point, you make peace with yourself and with your mistakes and accept that you are not perfect and that it is good enough and that you're going to be a good girlfriend and you're going to be a good worker and a good human being on the planet and then just give it a rest. Is it, how much of it does it boil down to that, or is that simplistic?
I think a lot of it does boil down to that, but it seems impossible to fix. And I don't want to be fatalistic.
Let's talk about that. What makes you feel it's impossible to fix, rather than, you know, those kind of things become a slow act. You know, all beliefs are actually reduced to neurotransmission. There actually are impulses in the brain. Memories are, and thoughts are reduced eventually to neuronal, whether it be in the synapse or in the dendrites. They are all physiological, and we change. Our brain has a measure of neuroplasticity and this sounds so silly, but it's not. If we constantly remind ourselves that stupid Stuart Smalley segment on Saturday Night Live, I was saying out loud these affirmations, I really am good enough. I'm not a slacker. I may not be the best, but that's good enough. By actually saying that out loud with feeling 10 times a day or every time you're feeling like crap, you actually change the brain neurons, and so you eventually start to believe it. Do you believe that that might, you know, and it certainly doesn't have any side effects. Do you believe that that would be of help to you, or you think that's just simplistic?
I think that's going to be a help, because those are not the type of things that I've been saying to myself in my head.
You sound like you're doing a good job. You've worked your butt off 60, 70 hours a week for a long time. You have a lot to be proud of. And, you know, man or woman, it doesn't matter. You sound like you have a lot to be proud of, and you need to give yourself a break. Like, you know, I try when I screw up, and I do, like everybody else, I really do try to just not think about it and move on and just go on to the next thing. Realize that what counts is my batting average, not that I bat 1,000. I'm gonna screw up. And just at some point, if you're doing a reasonable job, it is forgiving yourself. I just think that maybe it's worth consciously keeping that, making that your dominant thought for the next week. Just for the next week, that you're just going to think about forgiving yourself instead of, you've been a big striver, it sounds like. So for 1 week, trying to replace some of those striving neurons with self-acceptance neurons, does that make sense?
It does, and I will definitely do that.
All right.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you calling Work with Marty Nemco. You take care, huh?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I have a lot of respect, by the way, for people like you, people who work hard and beat themselves up. There are so many examples of people who are the most successful in the world, and they are really, they're always beating themselves up. The great accomplishers are always worried they're not good enough. It's the people who don't accomplish, who are complacent, that aren't. So she's a hero, right? I think she's a hero. Anyway, I have time for one more call. Let's go back to phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you doing?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
Yeah, I live in the Bay Area, and I work in the service industry, but I just don't want to do that forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in becoming an underwater photographer, actually.
Okay.
And it's kind of, it sounds like underwater basket weaving or something silly. I just don't know how to take, you know, small steps towards such a big goal.
Well, normally the, you know, the art side of it is harder to get into because, you know, there's no money in it. But there is industrial underwater photography that's done, for example, when there are oil rigs to see what's going on, what's right, what's wrong, so they can use that for diagnosis. That might be an easier point of entry. Would you be open to that?
Certainly, yeah. I got a nice DSLR camera and have been, you know, practicing. And then I just got scuba certified, so now I really have to dive into, you know, getting my skills solid there. But I never even thought about that.
Right. Diving in, that's a nice pun. I like that. So I would start, you know, no career counselor can know much about any particular industry. So what I would encourage you to do as the next baby step is get off the phone and Google underwater photography commercial. Commercial underwater photography or industrial. Sure, there are many uses. You know, there are people who may there may have been a shipwreck, and there are forensic underwater photographers who work for law enforcement to figure out what went on. And of course, there were I imagine that there were underwater photographers. They may have been working remotely using remote control kind of approaches during Flight 370 to try to figure out what the hell happened. You know, there are treasure hunters who still are looking for what happened at the Titanic. You know, and I think they made some discovery or whatever. So. But I would start by Googling commercial underwater photography. And then, as in everything else, I am not a technology-averse person. I use LinkedIn and the Internet as much as anybody. But especially when you're trying to get into make a career change, it is an irrational decision for somebody to hire with somebody with no experience. So you need to make them fall in love with you. So the way you make people fall in love with you is by getting involved with them. I don't necessarily mean sexually, although that has been known to work too. But spending time, getting involved in whatever the professional, there is a professional association for commercial underwater photographers, and getting involved, not just commercial, just for the fun of it. You might also get involved in just a plain old recreational or art photography for underwater and see what, you know, make relationships, get people to love you, and that can open doors more than all of the answering ads, and you may need the certifications and whatever, and you need the skills, but for making people fall in love with you is very crucial. Make sense?
Okay. Yeah, certainly.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty
Thanks
Nemco.
Thanks so much, Marty.
You're very welcome. And that is all the time we have today, so I apologize for the people who are still on hold. Please call back next week. I do love speaking with you and trying to help. So my thanks, as always, to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, especially on a show like this where I didn't have a guest, it's all about you. Thanks to all of you for listening and calling in with your very interesting problems and your honest disclosures about your insecurities or whatever. That's, you know, so helpful to everybody, and it also helps me help you if I really know what the issue that's really going on. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more 3-minute workovers on callers, and I will talk with veteran fisherman Mike Hudson on what it's really like to make a living fishing. He might even tell us a few fish stories. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.